Welcome to the first ever Parsha panel, courtesy of The Database with Rabbi Yeshua Eisenberg. I'm Rabbi Yeshua Eisenberg, and you've just entered The Database. And here for this Parsha panel, we are going to discuss a very heavy and sensitive issue, that is the Torah observance of the Avos. And here joining me are my two brothers. First, Rav Daniel Eisenberg, my older brother, who in his particular limud, when he's Maver Sedra, so he's not just Maver Sedra the regular way, Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum, but every single year he actually adds a Perush onto, maybe sometimes two Perushim, onto his repertoire of knowledge of the Parshios. So welcome, Rav Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have my younger brother, Rav Menachem Mendel Shlomo, and he has two of the most keen eyes when it comes to reading Chumash. He will notice small nuances in the text, things that, you know, only the Kliyakar or the Meshech Chachma can catch, or the Baal Turim. So my brother Mendy will catch it as well. Mendy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to with you guys.
Right, and it's exactly why I would love to have you guys, and hopefully you guys will be regulars. I've already had each of you for a Real Talk Torah, so I'm looking forward to speaking Torah with you more. And as I mentioned, we are in the Parshios of the Avos, and we find this Maimer Chazal floating around in many different variations, that the Avos for Mekayim is called Torah Kula Kodem Shenitna. The main source we find is a Gemara in Yoma on Chof Ches, which is describing Avraham Avinu. That was a pasuk in 2 weeks ago's Parsha, and Parsha's told us. This week is Parsha's Vayishlach. In Parsha's told us, we have where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yitzchak and says that I chose Avraham because Akev, he kept all of my Torah. And it describes all different lashonos of the different kinds of categories of Torah that Avraham kept. And this seems to be the Rashi's opinion on Kol Torah Kula, that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. And we find multiple permutations of this Maimer Chazal. So for example, Avraham and Lot observed Pesach. We find actually, that was in Parshas Vayera. In Parshas told us, we found that even Yitzchak observed Pesach, that he wanted a special goat just for that. So there are a lot of different versions of this Maimer Chazal. And this Maimer Chazal has left people scratching their heads for generations. So let's first start to talk about some of the issues. What are some of the obvious issues with this statement from Chazal that the Avos kept all of the Torah, everything before the Torah was given?
Right. Well, just to strengthen the statement a little bit before we even get into all the problems. One of them is that there are multiple sources that say that they Avraham even kept the Derabanans, right? Different sources say Erev Tavshilin, Erev Tchumen, Erev Haseros, like I think actually all three different are found in different Gemaras and Midrashim.
Right.
But that they kept the Derabanans is, and not just Derabanans, but like specific Derabanans is also going to be, strange, we're coming up to Hanukkah, so that means that they were lighting Hanukkah candles.
Right. Is that what that means, right? Do we say that completely brand new takanos, or what, like, does that mean that the Derabanans that were Xeros to preclude from, to preemptively avoid doing certain amaveros or violating certain mitzvos? Like, a lot of them, they seem like they came at a later date, so that's one
right.
Obvious issue.
Yeah, with all the Derabanans in general.
I mean, there are different kinds. There are different kinds of Derabanans. There are some Derabanans that, you know, they like that have a smach in the Torah, and it's, you know, like.
Well, yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
You have to discuss what that itself means. That there's, if it's a Derabanan, but it has some sort of source in Torah, is that a remez? Is that like an asmachta? According to some, that was, you know, just put attached to the text.
Right.
To have as a mnemonic, or is it just that the Torah alludes to everything? So there's an allusion to everything, not just Derabanans, but everything in history is found in the Torah. So that's like a separate discussion.
Right. So now it sounds
this conceptual piece. I mean, of course, with how they were able to fulfill every mitzvah including writing a Sefer Torah, which has not been written yet. And if you right, if to suggest that they had full Sefer Torah, and you know, of course, you know,
it would ruin the story a little bit.
What?
It would ruin the story a little bit.
Right.
It's away from the Nisyonos that the Avos went through. If they knew how it was going to end, it's like, oh, Yaakov should have just known that Yosef was alive the whole time.
Avram should have known that he that you know it wasn't really a big deal to bring Yitzhak up if he knew that at the end. Like it's absurd to understand that in
at least on its face
that Avraham had a Torah scroll, especially when we know that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, and just it plays out you know through history. So that right there is going to be problematic.
And there's the question of did Yaakov Avinu know where Yosef was all those years? Right, right. I like that video that Mandy and I know from of those little bears, those animated bears having a conversation. If Yaakov knew what was going to happen in the future, so there's a lot that seems to make no sense at all. Then we have to try to understand this Maamar Chazal.
Yeah, so that's a conceptual piece of how to understand each mitzvah, and then another problem is just the blatant violations of this, or assuming those who assume this approach assume that I don't know how far it extends. Does it extend to is Avram? Is it to Yitzhak and Yaakov as well? That's what it seems to be. And then it gets a little bit more shady when it gets to the Shvatim, and then
Moshe Rabbeinu,
and then the generations afterwards.
Right.
But the violations of the things which Ramban explicitly deals with in the pasuk that you quoted earlier. but things like Ramban points out that Yaakov marries two wives.
Right, so that Rabbeinu Gershom, that probably was not.
It's a problem to Rabbanan.
Well, right? is it a Derabanan or
Rabbeinu Gershom?
Do we call it a Derabanan or do we call it something else? It's probably much later Takana, because I don't know if I would call it a Derabanan. However, it's binding. Was that many?
Whatever it is, we know the elves didn't hold by it.
Well, yes, and so and there's also the.
Yeah, do you think they also read people's email? Or is that also a violation? I'm not sure. Things like that, like Yaakov marrying two wives, like Yaakov, you know, making a matseva, I mean, building bamos. These things seem to be violations of the Torah, and. If you're going to suggest that they kept these, they kept the entire Torah, so you're left with a lot of questions here and there. And then Ramban has answers and approaches, and perhaps it was only in Eretz Yisrael and things like that. But that's just another
right. So we'll go through a couple of them
of questions that come up. One is the conceptual piece. How does that make sense? Like you know if we know the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chav Vav, Rabbi Gomer would be proud, says that the Avos made up the Tfilos, Avraham made Shachris, Yitzchak made Mincha, Yaakov made Meir. So you're going to tell me that up until that point, Avraham was not davening Mincha? You know, he wasn't davening Tfilah three times a day? So
it sounds like a
Derabanan
that he wasn't keeping, right.
There's a conceptual piece, and then there is the violations that they clearly have of some of these mitzvos.
Right.
I think also another aspect, I think that some of the points that you may have touched upon it, so many mitzvos are situational. I mean, that's why there are a lot of derabanans on things that only became situations during this era, things that became situations in this era.
Right.
So many mitzvos that only apply to if you are in the situation. Just the listing of the, looking in the Rambam's list of mitzvahs. There's so many of them that only apply when the Beis Hamikdash was built. And you know, to my knowledge, the Beis Hamikdash was not built during the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
So I think you're touching on the mimer that appears at the beginning of this week's parsha in Vayishlach, right? So right, Yaakov Avinu, he says, "I'm love on Garti."
Don't sing it.
I'm not going to sing it,
save that for the Baal Tefillah workshop.
Exactly. Though I probably wouldn't use that one there either. Mendy and I have discussed this much in the past that when Rashi right over there says Imlov on Garti, and what's Garti? It's actually Osios Taryag, And that's Yaakov's way of saying, Taryag mitzvos shamarti. Right, and that's obviously strange because of exactly what Mendy's saying right now. Mendy points out that is it possible for anyone to actually observe all taryag of the mitzvos? Now you could say, oh, if you learn all of them, there's some say that if you learn the Torah, then maybe it's as if you fulfilled it. But you know, there are so many mitzvos that are either tulios baharetz, or tulios at least bisman beis hamikdash. If you have a beis hamikdash, or maybe it's certain mitzvos that only a kohen can do, or certain mitzvos that only a woman can fulfill. Or certain mitzvahs that are based in, or based in, or circumstantial mitzvahs like divorce, exactly.
Or Hashavas Gzela.
So
Yaakov is such a tzaddik, he stole something so he could be Makai the mitzvah of Hashavas Gzela.
Right, so obviously that's not what Taryag Mitzvah Shemarti means.
Right.
And you'd probably say, just for that mimer at least, that Taryag Mitzvah Shemarti is Yaakov Avinu's way of saying, I was, in general, the way we would call someone Shomer Torah Mitzvos, but obviously on Yaakov Avinu's level, that he was Shomer Torah Mitzvos. But still, we run into a wall when we talk about what you pointed out earlier, that Yaakov married two sisters, which is an open Isser in the Torah. So Rishonim spilling a lot of ink for generations to explain this, right? So
which we should note, by the way, is that it is not the only opinion in the Gemara over there.
It's not the only opinion.
Holds.
It's not.
And I think that's an important thing to know. I think that I mean, Rav Yehoshua, you could bring up the exact sources if you have it in front of you, but all the hak and all the raid about these different about how to solve for each mitzvah. Is everybody just working within that shita that he did keep all the mitzvos? And I think it's not to chas v'shalom minimize it, but it's fun to do so. It's an exciting
I'll mention a couple of things about that. So there are multiple opinions in the Gemara. The Gemara does have a give and take where it seems that the conclusive answer, or at least the best answer, is yeah, it must mean that he kept everything, because it says it goes through Chuksai, Mishmarosai, and then Torosai, and at the very end of it, you know, sometimes the Gemara leaves off with this is the best answer, like this argument won out, and it seems, I think, if you look back at the Gemara, it seems that that's the argument that wins out, and that is what Rashi quotes Al Torah, which is why, you know, Rashi is the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael, especially for Chumash. And really for Shas also, but Rashi is the Rebbe of the Bnei Yisrael, so that's the opinion that we're working with. And there are Svarim that are devoted to just explaining narrative based on how they must have been able to keep the Torah. But they're obviously, you run into a lot of these questions. So just to name some other issues that come up is Goy Sheshavas, Chayv Misa. So if you a guy who keeps Shabbos chayv misa, so I know that there are svarim that talk about this issue. There's the Mishnah
Lamelech. Just clarify that Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov are goyim.
Right. So that's another question. What is the status of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? Right. So I know that the Mishnah Lamelech says that they had the status of geirim. So if they have the status of geirim, okay, so then they're not goyim anymore. So that solves that issue. But there's the Yaakov Avinu marrying two sisters. How do they possibly write a Sefer Torah or Tefillin that talk about events that absolutely did not happen yet? So these are among the issues. Now, what we have to do is we can't just say, oh, well, it must mean that we can't take that Chazal for what it's saying. If that Maamar Chazal is stating that the Avos, or at least Avram Avinu, were Mekayim Kol Torah Kru'a Kodem Shnina, that they fulfilled the entire Torah before it was given, so we have to at least understand at the Gemara's word, what does the Gemara mean? Now, a lot of the Mefarshim, they give answers that will kind of, explain away a lot of these problems. Like there's a Maharal that, once you have this, I think it's Maharal, once you have this Maharal, it just kind of like fixes everything, but it just shakes up the entire Gemara. He says they kept whatever was shayach to them. Whatever was relevant to them, they kept. So obviously whatever wasn't relevant, they didn't keep. So, I guess that would, so we still have to answer for, Yaakov Avinu marrying two sisters by giving that answer. But if it was not relevant for them to compose the Sefer Torah with the text as we have it today, so perhaps that would be one of the many that are just not relevant to them. So, but there's that source out there.
And you could argue that a lot of the events like Hanukkah, so it's only relevant once the holiday exists.
Right, presume Nisa, what nes? Right, you want
now,
to publicize the nes.
And the Pesach Seder, so I don't know what Pesach Seder Avraham Avinu had. We know that there's a source that indicates, I mean, at least Lot Lot explicitly has matzos.
There are sources that say that Avram had too. There are sources, though. There are Rishonim that say that Avram had as well.
There are the Ugos. It's interesting that the Torah doesn't mention explicitly. The matzos are explicit by Lot. The Ugos are by
I mean, well, I've heard some explanations.
But nevertheless, it says that they ate matzah. It doesn't say that they had a whole Pesach Seder and Halach Ma'anya, and you know.
Well,
they didn't do that.
Well, again, we don't know to what extent they were doing certain things. Meaning, the Maamar Chazal doesn't say everything that you see us doing today is what they did. There are a lot of things that are different. You know, they weren't wearing the clothes that we're wearing now. You know, maybe they wore tzitzis, but we have to assume, based on natural cultural differences over time, that they didn't look the way we look. And so not all of their mitzvahs necessarily looked the way it looked for us. There are sources that say that Avraham Avinu's bris milah was very different from our bris milah. That once
right.
Once Matan Torah happened, the mitzvah changed. Nischadsha.
I'm saying that even the mitzvah if you got to Levincha, I don't even know if they did Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim because it didn't happen yet. However, matzah could be something else. Could be there's something deeper in the,
right.
The idea of matzah that it was something to do at that time, as opposed to other parts of it. I mean, this Maharal really opens up, as you said, right? It answers a lot of the questions that you might have. Not all of them, but a lot.
And it sounds like an easy fix. You know, I don't know if we would call it a cop-out, but it sounds like, you know, just a straight easy fix. Like, how else are you going to understand that line in the Gemara? One second. Sorry, we just lost sound for a second. Sorry, Rav Daniel, say that part again. The last thought. Go.
Yeah, and that Maharal, it's like it is an intuitive, you know, idea. Like we would have thought, like, you know, how else could we possibly explain it? It's nice to have the Maharal though, being a source to say such a thing.
Right, so now we go back to Yaakov Avinu just for a second, because, again, our parsha starts off with in Lavangarti Taryag Mitzvos Shemarti, and we can at least count some of the Taryag Mitzvos that he did not only not do, but he, like, violated. So he married two sisters. So there are some famous answers to this question, right? So, Mendy, you want to start us off with that? How is it possible that Yaakov married two sisters? It sounds like that's a blatant violation of a Torah commandment.
Well, there's the idea that as soon as he got to Eretz Yisrael, Asaph is about to get into Eretz Yisrael, Rachel dies, thus not allowing him to violate it in Eretz Yisrael, which is its own interesting like solution. I guess that kind of goes into what the Rambam says about not having if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, it's considered like you don't have a god. It's like. No.
Right, so the Ramban he says that yes, the Avos kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and then you have to try to then you have to look and see if how consistent that is. Does that work with every single other issue? So that's another, you know, that's another answer. It's an escape from the issue. But if you look throughout the Ramban's commentary, he seems to be very strong about his opinion of Eretz Yisrael in terms of the mitzvos. He seems to have this approach that all of the mitzvos are really tlios ba'aretz in a certain sense, that we do them in chutz la'aretz as practice. You know, it's like, you know, are we bound by them? We are 100% bound by them, but they don't have the same meaning as the same mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael. There's the story, maybe one of you can remind me which gadol it was, but he put on tefillin as soon as he got to Eretz Yisrael, because these were Eretz Yisrael tefillin. These weren't just, chutz la'aretz tefillin, meaning before he hadn't really done the mitzvah.
I don't know who that story is on, but I think that the idea really does shed light onto the whole concept of, you know, taryag mitzvah, shamarti. You know, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, mitzvahs themselves only counted. It's only considered that you're serving Hashem when you're in Eretz Yisrael. Then the action itself is not necessarily the key factor. It's, you know, the connection with the action in conjunction with your connection with Hashem. So I think that the whole idea of, you know, the almost keeping the Torah, it's similar to, you know, us keeping the Torah in Chutzara. It's there's a similar idea of just, you know, do whatever Ratzon Hashem is, wherever you are best serving Hashem. And if you're serving, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, that changes the quality of a mitzvah doing chutzaret. So I think that this is the same idea with the avos. The actions that they did are more important than what Hashem wants.
And you're gonna, so that might be some hashkafa behind this Ramban as to, you know, what it means that they only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And there are other famous answers. The truth is, my Rebbe in the Rosh Hashiva that we all shared with Jonathan Sachs, he has you know, his mastery work on Chumash Yom Mikedem, where he has a whole, he has multiple essays devoted to just this topic, and he quotes multiple sources on it. So among them, there's the Da'as Zakenim, which I don't know, Daniel, I don't know if you got to it yet, because you're doing Da'as Zakenim this year. It's in Perek Lamed Zayin. You wouldn't have gotten to it yet because that's in Vayeshev. But in Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Hey, the Da'as Zakenim says that the Avos kept the Torah at, with the status of Eino Metzuva Ve'osa. And that gave them the liberty, obviously, to not keep certain mitzvahs. They weren't bound by any of them. So even if they were Mekayim the Torah in a certain sense, they obviously weren't bound by it. So for whatever reason or another, they were obviously permitted to violate. Though it still makes you wonder, when we have this Maamar Chazal saying that they were Mekayim, this Kol HaTorah Kulo, does that mean that Hashem gave them the credit as though they had, or does it mean that as in general they kept the Torah and in certain, there are certain exceptions? I know that there's also...
Yeah, I think that that's what it is saying. That's the way they typically conduct themselves was in accordance with the Torah, even the Derabbanans. However, there's certain exceptions that need to be made at certain times. For example, you know, Avram generally held by not killing, but he, you know, he was willing to make an exception to kill his own son when Hashem told him to. Now that's
a very extreme example.
That's a very extreme example for the
Shevet Mitzvei Noach. Obviously, he would have been bound by that anyway, just because you know, goyim are bound by don't kill.
That's true, but again, the same concept that there's a, you know, a suspension of certain mitzvahs at certain times, and that's explicitly Hashem's command, and clearly right, Hashem's instruction was, I want you to go against what I typically ask of you. But that concept of, you know, sometimes they felt it was necessary, and Rav Mendi was saying that as well, that, you know, that there's like a spirit behind the mitzvah, and we are bound, like we nowadays. Nowadays
we're going to come back to this point, by the way. We'll come back to this point. What you're saying right now, but keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't want anybody who gets bored of this discussion and will sign out now. And I don't want them to keep halacha based on what we're saying. So I think it's just important to clarify that we're bound by the halacha now. But before, things were absolutely restrictive. You could substitute what might be Ratzon Hashem in that moment for the mitzvah. Nowadays, we don't have that clarity of anything
right,
but
so,
the Torah. So
saying in English is word for word what Rav Chaim Yevalazhin writes. It's in Nefesh HaChaim, but it's also in Ruach HaChaim. I have the exact sources written right here. So it's in the Nefesh HaChaim, Shar Aleph, in Perak Chaf Aleph, in Chelik Prakim Zion, and in Ruach HaChaim, it's Aleph Beis. And there, he writes this multiple times, but he says that, and this also appears in Rav Sachs' Yom HaMikedem. That's Rav Yonason Sachs, not the Lord, just my Rebbe, and a lot of people's Rebbe. But the Nefesh Chaim writes that the Avos were basically, they were building the world. They were building Klal Yisrael. And, you know, kind of like Olam Chesed Yibana, he quotes that pasuk in Navi, Olam Chesed Yibana, the world is built on Hashem's Chesed, which entails the suspension of certain rules. So, for example, Cain was able to marry a sister, right, to have kids. So because of that, certain rules were suspended. So he said that when it came to the Avos, as a klal, they kept the Torah. But when they saw, for whatever reason, through their purity and connection to Hashem, that the Ratzon required them to do something else that was not what's in accordance with the Torah, So they opted for that over what the Torah says. So, for example, if Yaakov Avinu saw through his clear view of what the Ratzon Hashem was, that he's supposed to marry both Rachel and Leah, or maybe in order would be both Leah and Rachel, so that's exactly what Yaakov did in order to build the Shiftei Ka. And Yaakov Avinu was allowed to do that. And the Nefesh Chaim says, all of that was Kodem Matan Torah. They had that liberty, Kodem Matan Torah, that clarity they had, they were able to do that. And he says, once the Torah was given, no one is allowed to do that. We have no way of knowing. Now, obviously, if you're a Navi, like Eliyahu HaNavi, and you want to, and you have a Haras Shah, that you're going to do Shchutei Chutz, and you're going to do Avodah outside the Mikdash, so... Yeah, you know, there were certain people who were on the level that they were able to engage in a Haras Shah, which is an exceptional time where again rules can be suspended. And in fact, I think the Or HaChaim says this explicitly as well, that basically every single time the Avos violated the Torah, it was a Haras Shah. Meaning, yeah, you're right. In Hachinami, there was an exception, but other than that exception, or other than those exceptions, they were Mekayim the Torah. So. Now that we have a little bit of an understanding of like where all these sources are, and again, there are Svarim devoted to answering just these kinds of questions, but I want to shift gears just slightly and get a little bit more hashkafa behind this Maamar Chazal, meaning Chazal are giving us this information that you should know that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. You should know that the Avos were Mekayim is called Torah Kulo Kodem Shenidna. What do you think we're supposed to do with that information? Like, why did Chazal see it important for us to know? You know, like, I don't know if would we have looked at, you know, Avraham funny if we found out that he ate a cheeseburger or that he ate chicken. That he served milk and meat. Maybe he served in a certain order. Maybe he was serving it to people that he thought were goyim and were allowed to eat it anyway. You know, that question in itself doesn't bother me so much. But if we knew that Avraham made a cheeseburger, we wouldn't be so bothered considering that the Torah wasn't given. So like Chazal apparently said, no, you should know that they were keeping the Torah. So like. How important is that? You know, it seems that from the Rishonim and the Acharonim who write about this is very, very important. Like, you know, we overturn every stone to try to make sure that we've answered the questions of how it's possible. Could the Avos have possibly kept the Torah? And whatever level they did keep it, like, what is that supposed to mean to us?
We even overturned the stone that Yaakov put up as a
mock. Yes, that one too.
That stone. Yeah, it's a good question. And I think one aspect of it is that it shows that the mitzvos are just beyond just what was given at Har Sinai, meaning that they are, we know the famous Maamar of the Zohar, Histaka Baraiso Bara Alma, that in some sense, and this also could be misunderstood, as most of the Zohar could be, but the Torah was... preceded the creation of the world, and the mitzvos existing before they were commanded also kind of demonstrates that point, that these mitzvos are they're not as simple as you may think they are,
like a commemoration of something that happened one time,
right? But there is an eternal truth that is accomplished through a mitzvah.
The mitzvahs are a blueprint for the world.
Beyond our simple comprehension.
Right. So, in fact, I've heard in that vein, I don't have any explicit source for this, but I've heard that it's not that, you know, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in a haste and therefore we eat matzah, but there's a mitzvah of matzah, and therefore Avraham Avinu had matzah, Lot had matzah, and there was a circumstance in which we would also eventually eat matzah, that Hashem took us out in haste so that we would have matzah.
Yeah, so I see it also as kind of a lahavdil, like an echad miyodeh situation. One of the reasons that like we sing echad miyodeh, I can make all these different connections. I see number 10, and I can think immediately, I see any number, I can immediately think of the mitzvahs. So I think that it's how do we fit in whatever Hashem wants? We're talking about it's just Ratzon Hashem. Fitting it into every situation, and say like, well, did the Avos keep the Ratzon Hashem? Well, the Ratzon Hashem is this mitzvah that we were commanded. This is the nature of whatever Hashem wants. How can we fit that into their actions if we assume that their actions were almost entirely Ratzon Hashem, mm-hmm. choice? I think that, you know, there are so many times when we'll even have the Chazal that seems to suggest otherwise about, you know, the Avos keeping the Torah, or example of hearing that Amram, who's on the list of people who have never done any Averos, also seems to be suggested that he is the father of Eldad and Medad, and he became the father of Eldad and Medad when he left Miriam.
Yocheved. Yeah,
when he left Yocheved, and that means that he
was his aunt. By the way,
I think that's the point that he's getting at. Yocheved was Amram's aunt, which nowadays is a nisur d'oraisa to marry.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, I think he's also Machzir Gershaso that got remarried and had different children, and he had Moshe through that, and we say he is one of the people who had never sinned. It's like by Chazal saying that statement that Amram never sinned, they're also the ones who say that all these things about Amram.
Amram. So I guess maybe you would say that Amram was excluded from the people who kept the entire Torah, and for him it wasn't a sin, because maybe it was all Kodem Matan Torah.
Yeah, I think the point that I'm trying to get at is that, you know, do mitzvos in the literal terms, it's a commandment from Hashem, it's not like a good deed.
It's intrinsically indispensable.
What?
Intrinsically indispensable.
Yeah, exactly. I think that bottom line, if a person is doing what Hashem wants, you know, even if it's not like, you know, a mitzvah, it's not like a good deed, as we usually, I have done this with my students, try to explain to them that a mitzvah is not translated as a good deed. It's a commandment. So if Hashem commands you something, that is a mitzvah for you. And I think that's bottom line. You know, so it's not one of the 613 mitzvahs, which gets to the question of Tariyak Mitzvah Shemaitre. I don't think that can be literal. I think what he's saying is, yeah, I listened to Hashem. That's essentially what Tariyak Mitzvahs is.
Right. And so it's interesting because both of you went in this direction of, This tells us a little bit about the mitzvos. I was thinking, you know, not just about the mitzvos, which I don't think is incorrect, but I think, you know, the other direction you can go is it tells us a little bit of something about the avos. Meaning, you know, we have the Torah narratives, and it seems that, you know, in our generation and generations not so long before us, you know, everyone thinks that once you have an English translation of the Chumash, you can read the narrative, let the narrative speak to you, say whatever you want it to say, or say whatever, you know, whatever speaks to you, how you can relate to the Avos. And in a certain sense, I would say, yes, Dibra Torah Kilashim B'nei Adam, we're supposed to read the Torah in a way that we can understand and learn from the individuals, the individual players who are in the Torah. But again, you can get carried away with reading about the Avos and saying, this is a story about this kind of a struggle, a modern day psychological, whatever. And right here, we're being told a very otherworldly kind of statement about the Avos, that they were completely in line with Ratzon Hashem, they had Ruach HaKodesh, and they were able to fulfill the Torah. And I think that naturally presents a struggle of how do you relate to the Avos, but if there's one thing that's true, we relate to them with utmost awe and reverence. You know, whatever we're going to do to learn from them as human beings, we also have to, on the other hand, think of them as superhuman beings. Right?
Meaning if we're talking about, like, There is a very specific calculation that allowed Yaakov to marry two women.
Who were sisters.
So, sorry, yes, two women who were sisters, or four women who were all sisters.
Right.
So half sisters. But if that is the case, then surely he's not just giving it to simple tivos, like that's not even on his radar.
Right.
What is not on Yaakov's radar is base tivos that the average human being would have. What's on his radar is only Ratzon Hashem and how to juggle that with what are conventional mitzvos optional conventional mitzvos, that's his struggle. And that's all a struggle. So I mean, there's much greater discussion, I'm sure.
Right, and this goes back to what we spoke about.
Maybe I'll have us back on a future Real Talk Torah.
Sure, no, definitely.
How liberally you can play, or if at all you can use modern psychology on stories in Tanakh. But this is definitely a big push in the direction against that. That these people are dealing with things that are far beyond what any normal people would be dealing with.
Surely, and this goes back to what we spoke about last week in Real Talk Torah, confronting Yaakov's quote unquote lie, where we were addressing this issue, where you know you absolutely look at the story and you see a certain picture of Yaakov if you're looking at it with very basic eyes, you know, a natural cursory glance, you get a certain picture of Yaakov Avinu, but you have to, you know, like you can't just look at it that way. It's you're missing something from the story. We spoke about how how the story speaks to Yaakov's innocence and wholesomeness as well. But there's also just this aspect of, you know, while they were humans and while they have stories that look very humanly, so that we can learn from them. Obviously, there's much more than, you know, there's a lot more than what it seems to be, you know, just from the plain text. And this statement from Chazal about the Avos' fulfillment of the entire Torah, I think definitely speaks to that. And, you know, it's not that anybody that can read an English translation of the Chumash, or even someone who's great at Hebrew, can just take the story apart the way they want to and say, of course, this Pashat Pshat is what it means. You know, you can look at the Rishonim, you can look at the Pashtunim and see what they say, but you don't have that without Chazal. You can't just dismiss Chazal. Even Ibn Ezra, you know, who will tell you, okay, here, you know, this is the Maamar Chazal, and then I'll give you a Pshat. Because there's a Pshat, you know, the Mikra doesn't ever completely leave Pshuto, right? There's always a simple read to the text. But, you know, again, this also might speak to a larger discussion about, you know, learning the Chumash with Drash. But the point is that there is far more than just Pshat. There's the whole gamut of Pardes. Pshat, Remez, and Sod, and Drash. So, I think this was a really great conversation, and I was very happy to have the two of you with me for this. Because, again, it's a very heavy issue.
It's a pleasure to speak with you guys. Talk to our other things too, but especially Tara.
Yeah. I think that's all the time we have left for this first ever Parsha panel. But again, if there are two things that we walk away from, maybe it's the importance of the mitzvos, and it's also the level of the avos. And I think that should be something that we aspire to. And to have that certain reverence when we learn the Chumash, you know, we should always try to, you know, to glean what we can as people from it, but also recognize the level of the Avos. Anyway, Ashkoch, Rav Daniel, Ashkoch, Rav Mendy, thank you guys so much for joining. And everyone else, please tune in next time on the database.